are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What up? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, July the 13th, and the Delete 8 mock draft starts today. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts that your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Thanks for staying with us through the pandemic. Basketball is almost here. We've almost made it through the shutdown as July 30th will be the start of the new season. But of course, the Pistons won't be included in the restart as they are in the Delete 8. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. The 2.0 mock draft of the Delete 8 teams, the 8 teams left out of the NBA bubble. And we shook it up a little bit and figured out the new list of where they would land in the lottery. And we're going to play the recording of the teams picking 1 through 3. I'll tell you right now that the Pistons were number 6. So I will be participating in the draft tomorrow with 4, 5, and 6. And then we're going to have 7 and 8 after that. That is the week ahead here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. It's a vacation week for me, so we're going to take it easy a little bit personally, recharge the batteries, be ready for some new content going forward. But I do want to give maybe a little take at the start of every show this week, a little bit of original new content for you guys. But first, give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Give us a favor as well on Twitter and follow the new Twitter account, Play_Michigan. That is the Play Michigan account, the new one for the new full-time job. So support that as we're trying to grow that. Click on the articles. Give us a love with the traffic as well. We appreciate that. Some really interesting stuff. We're going to cover sports gambling a little bit with this show going forward as it's a new thing here in the United States legally and also coming to Michigan online this fall. We'll keep you updated about all of that. But, yeah, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a take to start the week here, and that's something that's not probably not true, but maybe some unfounded conspiracy theory. Nothing better in American life than a little bit of a conspiracy theory, right? How about this one? Woj got suspended on purpose. That's my conspiracy theory. I don't think it's true. It's probably not true. But think about it. Does he want to go? I mean, these media members that are going to the bubble, they're quarantining for 7 days, right, when they get there. So they can watch 8 days or 8 games for each of these teams before the whole playoffs start and then the playoffs begin. I think he maybe fabricated the suspension, did the whole thing as kind of an act, and a little bit of a multi-part. He's playing it from all angles, right? And again, this isn't necessarily true. It's me coming up with this out of my butt. But think about it, right? Does Woj want to go spend the entire time in the bubble, or does he maybe just want to get there for the playoffs, maybe just the conference finals, and get the real good juicy stuff? And also, we know that the teams are in there. We know the players are all in the bubble. But if the agents aren't in there, and some of the executives aren't either, is it really worth it for Woj? I mean, Woj is going to be around all the power brokers. And even inside the bubble, I don't know if the media access is going to be very good. I mean, we're talking Zoom calls after games, things like that. I think Woj might have been doing a little bit of a cost-benefit analysis here and a little bit of a long game as well. I'll send this FU email out to Josh Hawley of Missouri, the senator who was trying to rail on the NBA for the causes out there and whatever they're not supporting, and bringing up Hong Kong and China, things that, of course, LeBron James and the NBA really need to be concerned with. And I know it is an issue, and it's a real issue around the globe, but not certainly something that's on the tip of the tongue of young guys, especially black guys in America, given what's going on in our country right now. So Woj obviously comes out of this looking better with the players he covers, the executives he covers, the league he covers, because of course this is a league that leans left. We know that. And it's something that's embracing the Black Lives Matter movement. It's embracing a lot of the social issues that line up with their financial interests and of course their social interests and their personal interests as well. Hong Kong and China certainly aren't on the radar of a lot of these guys. And if anything, guys like LeBron, who make millions of dollars and maybe could upset the apple cart a little bit if they go after China and some of the things that they're doing over there, which could be justified if they did that. Maybe they should in some regards, but it doesn't make a lot of sense if it's attacking the pocketbook and it's not something that's in your face and on your radar to begin with. So I don't blame LeBron. Woj, you don't want to fire off the quick email when you're emotional about something. Never a good thing in a work situation, of course. I think maybe we've been there all to probably lesser extents at times in our lives. But so lessons to be learned there. But maybe Woj is playing the long game, right? Maybe he's thinking, getting the good graces of my teams that I cover, the league that I cover, the players that I cover, get suspended, don't have to go to the bubble for a little while, get a little street cred out of this, and move on. And all the better, right? Guys like me are retweeting Lou Williams, who's supporting him over the weekend, and all the other players on social media, including LeBron as well. Josh Howley's a clown. Just want to throw that out there, too, while we're talking about the subject. But yeah, just wanted to give you guys a little unvarnished take. Didn't want to use the Delete 8 mock draft all week as kind of the only content that you're going to hear. We'll come up with some more takes for the next couple episodes as well. But up next, we will be doing the Delete 8. The guys are going to join us, and I'm going to be part of the exercise on tomorrow's show, but the other guys will give you picks 1 through 3, and that's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But hey, got to tell you guys about rockauto.com. The convenient self-service of rockauto.com is the most important thing. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet for your ride. Whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and the prices that you prefer. I recommend going with the low prices. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com always reliably low, and the same for the pros as the do-it-yourselfers like you, Joe Schmo, in the driveway. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Yes, sir!
Hello, everybody. My name is Brad Rowland. I'm the host of the Locked On Hawks podcast, and we're back with another crossover Delete 8 mock draft. This is volume 2, I suppose, and I'm joined today by Evan Damrell of Locked On Cavs and Matt Peck of Locked On Bulls. Gentlemen, thanks for being here today.
No, thanks.
Happy to be here.
So basically, if you missed the first edition of this, which actually was all in sort of different groups, we're basically chopping up the 8 of us into different mini shows and then putting it all together if you'd like to follow along. This time around, the 3 of us have the top 3 picks in the draft. I actually, as the Hawks, had the number 1 overall pick. And then from there, we get to Chicago with number 2 and Cleveland with number 3. Before we dive into the picks themselves, and you guys, I'm sure, have shared this information in other places, but I'm wondering for my own sake here, you know, I guess we'll start with Evan. How do you guys feel about this draft? Obviously, a lot's been said about how not spectacular it is at this point in time. But given that we are drafting at the top of this class and get sort of the picks that are, I guess, the most optimal, how are you all feeling about the possibility of getting these top 3 picks?
Yeah, like you said, it's suboptimal. I mean, especially in Cleveland's position, because this is such a guard heavy draft class, especially in the top. And then I think, Brad, we've talked about this before when you came on Locked On Cavs with Chris and I, but just the fact that a lot of these top picks that are favored to go high in this year's draft class have so many lumps, they don't really fit into what Cleveland's trying to build. So ideally, I would prefer for the Cavs pick to fall maybe into the 5 or 6 range based on their lottery odds right now. But that's just kind of how I feel about the draft in general. But I mean, I'll take the best talent available, because again, Cleveland's also a team that's starved for talent, so I can't be too particular about who they do and don't take.
Yeah, Jordan, my co-host, and I weren't thrilled with the way that this mock draft 2.0 shook out. This draft class in particular is a little underwhelming. As far as the Bulls team needs, like, clearly, you know, after Otto Porter Jr., you know, picks up a $28 million option as a lame duck veteran, the Bulls still have no long-term solutions at the wing right now. There are some like lottery level wings, but none of them were real like top tier. Most of like the top five in this particular draft are bigs or guards. So, you know, we didn't feel great about being number two. The only thing that we felt good about at number two was a chance that maybe Atlanta would pass up on LaMelo because y'all have Trae Young already. And then B, just not being at number seven because Bulls fans are sick of being at number seven.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. That's I guess every franchise has that one cursed spot, and I guess that's probably where the Bulls are at this point with seven. And you know, the Hawks. I'll speak for the Hawks now. It's last year they got very unlucky in the lottery. So to in this particular edition of this mock draft setting, getting very lucky, I guess, is a good thing. But at the same time, this is not a great draft, in my opinion, to have the number one pick in. Obviously, you know, from an asset perspective, you still want to have the number one pick, I guess, if all things are equal, because you could trade it or whatever happens. But in this setting, you know, I did try to explore some trades, but one of those things where it's not, you know, true to life all the way through. So it wasn't like I could just be on the phone for 3 months talking about trades in the way that some of this stuff could work.
We had a couple negotiations on the table, but Chris isn't here, so I can kind of slander his name a little bit, but he's editing, so hopefully he's kind to me. we had some trades on the table, but Chris got some serious cold feet because we're pretty enamored with Kevin Porter, Locked On Cavs, and once you kind of threw his name out there, and then the counteroffer you had with the pick protections, Chris is just like, I don't really want to get hosed if I was the Cavs long term. I'm like, okay, well, if you're not comfortable, we'll back out.
It's risky to do a trade like this, and you know, I've stated on my podcast repeatedly that if the Hawks won the lottery, I would sort of put the for sale sign out immediately. And I kind of did that in our group chat. I kind of did that in our email chain with everybody. Just said, all right, the pick's available, but you know, practically, not as easy to do that in that short period of time. But I certainly would put the pick up for sale if I was the Hawks. I guess I can go ahead and announce the pick that I made, and that is that I chose to take LaMelo Ball. It was not an easy decision, I will say, for the Hawks. I do have Ball as my number one guy overall on a big board setting pretty clearly. But as you know, as we sort of alluded to earlier, the Hawks, of course, have a point guard already. I do think that it can work with Trae Young and LaMelo Ball, because LaMelo is legit 6'6", 6'7". Trae Young's a great shooter, etc. But even I, as an optimist with that pairing, would acknowledge that it's not perfect by any means. At the end of the day, though, I'm not enamored with Anthony Edwards or any of the other options. And as a result of that, I just, you know, stuck to my board, essentially. I took the best player available with LaMelo, knowing full well that it could come back to bite me. But again, I'm on record as saying the Hawks should at least try to explore the market if they get the number one pick. But I just couldn't take anybody but LaMelo Ball. Now I have to open it up for you guys to roast me, because it is somewhat controversial, I suppose.
I mean, it is controversial in one way, and in one other way, it's very much not. I think a lot of people now, you know, people talk about Weissman and people talk about Edwards, but I feel like LaMelo has gotten a lot of steam to be like, you know what? In such an underwhelming draft class, why not swing for the fences with a talent like that? And people are already talking about him perhaps surpassing the ceiling that Lonzo can reach, even though that Lonzo looks to be in a better situation now that he's moved on to New Orleans after his stint with the Lakers. Like, I don't think it's entirely crazy. If the Bulls were in a position to draft LaMelo, I would have my reservations. Mostly those reservations have to deal with LaVar Ball, but that's just my own personal issue. No, I don't think you're crazy for that.
I don't think I really want to roast you on this one, because clearly, by and far, at least based on what mock drafts are saying and based on what I'm kind of gathering from, well, at least from the Cavs perspective, the Cleveland themselves views LaMelo Ball as the top prospect in this draft class. And they have done their due diligence on the LaVar front, and the fact that his coaches at Spire and his coaches in Australia, when he was with the Hawks, they kind of said that LaVar is really hands-off and just not as involved and as much of a helicopter parent. So maybe that concern is a little bit thrown out the window at this point. But, you know, you still have to do your due diligence, because LaVar still gets a platform on TV, on Fox Sports, for some reason, one way or another. But I can understand why you just go with best player available, especially in a draft class like this. But you could also say, like, LaMelo, if he does, like, play up to Lonzo's potential, at least on the defensive side of the ball, like, he could pair nicely alongside Trae as like a two guard option, and just, you know, kind of cover a lot of Trey's defensive issues, and the fact that you have two outstanding playmakers in Trey and LaMelo in your backcourt, like, that's a really great foundation to have if you're in Atlanta's position.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, like, not to say that Trey isn't also a solid passer and playmaker, because he's certainly shown those abilities in the first 2 years, but LaMelo is, like, that is his bread and butter. That is his greatest strength, is his court vision and his playmaking ability. And LaMelo's weakness right now is his outside shot. So assuming that he can build upon that, it might be a really solid pairing, because Trey can shoot the lights out and LaMelo is such a gifted passer, they would actually work pretty well together.
Yeah, I do think that it can work. Like I said before, you know, LaMelo's size makes it a lot easier to pair those two together. It's not like you're drafting another small point guard. That wouldn't be ideal, I don't think. But because LaMelo is, you know, basically shooting guard size, essentially, those guys could play together. Trey's shooting. I do think LaMelo's going to be able to play defense. He was not great necessarily at lower levels, but because he is smart as a sort of guy who feels the game well, he's very long and active when he wants to be. I think that can work as well. And the Hawks are in the market for another ball handler. You know, I think ideally there's probably better fits out there, but they want to have someone who can run the offense when Trey's on the bench, and also sort of be that legitimate secondary ball handler when Trey is on the court. So at the end of the day, it's not perfect, but I do think that LaMelo is the best prospect in the draft. It's not a great draft to be number one overall, especially as the Hawks. And I know the Cavs have the same problem, where there's a lot of lead guards in this class, and the Hawks don't want a lead guard. Granted, at least the Hawks have they're sort of sold on their lead guard in a way the Cavs, I don't think, are at this point. But I'll let Evan get into that later. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm taking my best guy, even if I would be a little bit more worried, sort of in practical real life, that the Hawks might not want to do this. I just, for me, I'm sticking to my board. All right, Chicago's on the clock. Now LaMelo's gone. Where are we headed for the Bulls?
Right, so speaking of drafting for need versus drafting best available, especially this high up in the lottery, that was essentially what my co-host Jordan Malley and I were debating. And what we ended up with was taking best available and also best ceiling, because I had mentioned earlier on the Bulls' desperate need for a long-term solution at the wing. So that had us looking really closely at Auburn's Isaac Okoro. I really like that kid. I think he was one of the best, if not the best, defenders in college basketball that we saw this past season. And he is that perfect prototype of modern NBA being able to guard. I think he can guard 1 through 4 in the NBA with his size and his skill set. He's not bad creating his own opportunities off the dribble. He's also pretty decent attacking the basket. Only a 29% three-point shooter at Auburn. So, you're optimistic that he can, you know, build out on that range a little bit and stretch the floor. But it was so tempting to take him because the Bulls just have no answers at the wing right now. But because Anthony Edwards just appears to be that potential special talent in this draft, especially offensively, and the fact that this rebuilding Bulls roster that's going nowhere right now, you know, you could say maybe if you were on a team with more wins, Zach LaVine had a quasi all-star season just now. The other pieces of this rebuild, you know, Coby White flashed at times as a rookie. Markkanen and Wendell both regressed, both battle injuries. We felt like we couldn't pass up the high ceiling swing for the fences pick in Edwards, even though the Bulls backcourt is already a little bit crowded with some of these rebuilding pieces.
I guess my question for you is Chris and I have gone back and forth on this a lot on Locked On Cavs. We actually did a quote unquote draft where we picked, like, the out of the Delete 8 teams, the teams that had the best potential future. And I went with Chicago just based on the fact that I really like the young pieces that the Bulls have assembled. I just think the coach that you guys have in place isn't the right tactician to guide these players into the right positions, you know, to help them grow.
How dare you besmirch the epic Jim Boylan and all of his greatness?
My apologies.
In case
I didn't.
The sarcasm wasn't clear. That was a heavy dose of sarcasm.
I appreciate your wit. Trust me, but it's just I feel like a lot of what Chicago's assembled. Like, I really like Wendell Carter. I really like Zach LaVine. I really like Coby White. I like Lauri Markkanen. I like a lot of the. I mean, even Archie Diacono, who, you know, is it's debatable on what kind of player he is, but like he's a solid backup.
He's the second coming of Kirk Heinrich, obviously. That's
what
he is.
There you go. I love the optimism here. This is what I don't get on Locked On Cavs. So having someone brimming optimism is refreshing at times. Love you, Chris. But so that's just like my biggest thing, and I totally get the Okoro thing. Because I feel like if you put I draw comparisons to when the 49ers hired Harbaugh as their head coach. And I mean, Alex Smith was an okay quarterback, but Harbaugh kind of whispered into him and both Kaepernick and turned them into a Super Bowl contender. But the 49ers had so much talent available that I feel like at this point, the Bulls have the luxury of maybe drafting a little bit more for fit. And I think Okoro was a great pickup in that regard. Just, I too am a big fan of him. It's just like maybe I have a little bit of concerns about his shooting ability, but that's okay. I mean, you have plenty of shooters that go around in Chicago. Maybe you need a little bit of more defensive stoppers instead.
Yeah, and you know, so Jordan and I put ourselves in the shoes of the Bulls front office here. As a Bulls fan wondering about what they might do in this upcoming draft, it's very curious because we have this new front office coming in. You know, we brought in AK from Denver. We brought in Eversley from Philly. And so now we're kind of wondering ourselves what they're going to look for. Are they going to go best available, or are they going to go for need and say, okay, clearly Otto's out of here after this year. We love this young, talented wing who could be a versatile, multi-positional defensive player for us. Let's go with that because we've got these other talented pieces at these other spots. Or would they just say, you know what, regardless of fit, let's take the best talented player that we think is on the board and then figure out the chemistry of which pieces stay and which pieces go later on?
Yeah, it's just in general, this is a tough spot for the Bulls, which I think we all kind of could acknowledge, especially with Melo off the board.
Absolutely.
I think that Edwards is perfectly reasonable here, honestly. Like, I'm not the biggest Edwards fan, but even with that said, like, you can acknowledge what the pieces are in his game, that if it all came together, he's very, very talented. There's a reason why he is often considered, you know, one of the top two or three guys in his class. He is very, very talented. The fit with LaVine isn't ideal by any means, but there isn't another, like, super obvious pick. I like other guys that might be better fits there, like Okoro. I'm a big Okoro fan, but, you know, best player available is not the worst thing to do here. And I think Anthony Edwards, you could certainly make the case, is the best player available. And I'm not sure that anybody on the Bulls is like so immovable that you have to draft for fit. I think you almost have to have a player that's like a legitimate superstar number one option to build around to actually start concerning yourself with fit too much. And I know LaVine is a good player, but I don't view him that way. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't view him that way as a guy that you have to worry about all that much. So if you think Edwards is the guy, you just take him, even if it's not perfect.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel. I would guess my co-host Jordan feels the same way as far as LaVine and what his ceiling is. We love the fact that he has been a dutiful soldier and then some through this rebuild that's gone nowhere. And he's been nothing but professional with all the ridiculous things that Jim Boylan has done to this team over the last year and a half since season control. But I think both of us would agree in that if you're talking about a deep playoff run caliber team, a championship contention level team, Zach LaVine is good. And I think he can still get a little better than he is now, but he's not going to be the 1A person on that kind of team. And I would say if he's the best player and the best talent the Bulls have right now, then by definition, none of them are untouchable pieces, which is why I think that's, you know, another factor into why we decided to go, hey, you know, Edwards, there are some parts of his game we don't love or worry about. But as far as swinging for the fences on a young rebuilding team, that's like we're basically going to see what this new front office does and, you know, rebuild 2.0 and see who stays and who goes. Let's try and add our greatest chance at a legit star caliber player. And as much as we both loved the idea of Okoro just fitting right in to that, you know, really versatile wing position that the Bulls need, we felt like, you know, we may regret passing up on Edwards.
Makes sense, honestly. You know, and Okoro being a nice runner-up, I think he's a very talented player, but nothing wrong with passing on him at number two overall. I'm a big Okoro fan, but it's not like he has to go in the top two in realistic life. Evan, do you have any final thoughts on the Edwards pick?
No, I get it. I do have my concerns with Anthony Edwards for a little bit. I mean, having gone through the Deion Waiters experience with Cleveland, Edwards drawing comparisons to Deion Waiters does raise red flags in my head a little bit, but there's a reason why he's also the top of most of these draft boards, besides the fact that it's not a very talented draft class to begin with. I mean, there is potential there. It's just if he ends up in the right situation, I think it works out better for him. And maybe Chicago is one of those situations, like I said, if you get a good head coach who can finally tap into the potential of what the Chicago roster has, it could work out beautifully in the end.
I guess the real question is Edwards as big of a fan of Vettables as Dion Waiters is?
Sure hope not.
That might be a weighing factor as well.
That is a very important question when you're trying to evaluate these guys. Is are they as big of a fan as Dion?
Was weighing factor a Waiters pun? Because my guy Dion ballooned a little bit after he was let go by Miami too. So it's like
it was not intended to be that way, but it does work.
It worked out great. All right, the Cavs are on the clock at number three, and I do not envy the Cavs at any spot in the top three of this draft, and now here we are.
Neither do I.
Evan, it's up to you, buddy.
Well, so there's a little bit of a recent development after Chris and I went back and forth on this pick. So our big board going into this was LaMelo number one, and that's why we were offering Brad. I'm like, listen, we really want LaMelo Ball, like scratching my neck, like desperate to hopefully get this pick trade down. And then Kevin Porter Jr. was the offer, and then we immediately walked away because he's the best young player on the Cavs roster.
You have
and
to
I'm
trade something,
kidding,
and
honestly.
Listen, just in my listen, defense, you have to trade something.
A lot of guards. They have a young guard in Colin Sexton. That's an Atlanta native that could be available.
I understand, but in my own brief defense here, I think the Hawks, at least if I'm running them in this theoretical scenario, would have very little interest in either Sexton or Garland just for fit reasons. Those guys don't make a lot of sense in Atlanta. So if you go past those guys, the only
Sexton
other
and
prospect,
Garland don't make a lot of sense together to begin with. So
that is true. But if you go beyond that, the other options that the Cavs have in terms of assets are picks and Kevin Porter Jr. That's basically it. So that's what I asked for.
That's fair. I mean, shrewd negotiation. This is an NBA 2K where I can just bully the AI into giving me their best player for a couple second round picks. But so after LaMelo was off the board, Chris and I were going back and forth on this. For me personally, my number two was Onyeka Okongwu, but I had Killian Hayes as a close third. Chris had Killian Hayes third, and I believe I don't have my phone in front of me. It was because we're conversing about this briefly. I believe he either had Devin Vassell or somebody else at his third spot. And then we both agreed, like, yeah, no, Hayes is the option. But in a development today, apparently his agent did an interview with a French either radio show or podcast and shared that Killian is refusing to interview with Cleveland. So surprise, surprise, he's being taken against his own will just because we like what he brings to the table and the fact that the Cavs still need help at playmaking. Colin Sexton, clearly at this point, doesn't have the vision to be a playmaker. I know in JB Bickerstaff's simplified offense, it's a lot more pick and roll heavy. We're seeing Sexton's assist numbers tick up a little bit, but maybe that's a little bit of fool's gold and just a bit of a dead coach drop. And then Darius Garland, we're still kind of not sure what we can get from him at this point. Chris and I would at least give him a grade of did not complete for this season, just because we're not 100% sure what we have with him at this point, just because of injuries and his recovery from multiple surgeries heading into his rookie campaign and everything. So like, it's just a little weird with him. So, I mean, Kevin Love would go insane because it's just flashes of Minnesota drafting three point guards in a row with your top picks. So that would suck for sure. But we like what Killian Hayes brings to the table and the fact that since he is an international prospect and is a lot more raw at 18 years old, he's easier to bring off the bench so you don't have to piss off either Sexton or Garland and benching one of them. But the fact that Hayes is just a solid playmaker and shows potential as a perimeter shooter and just, you know, with his off-ball defense as well and feel for the game. And he reminds me a lot of Manu Ginobili. I mean, I know it's maybe like a little bit of a lazy comparison, but it's just because he's a left-handed shot maker. But Chris and I like what he brings to the table. And then you kind of just figure out what you have at the time. Like if you have to pick between Sexton, Garland, and Hayes, you pick the best two and then you try and trade the other one or just try and flip the assets because the Cavs really cannot be too picky for talent at this point. And that's just kind of what my stance is. And I think Chris and I are both on the same page in that regard. So that's just kind of where we are at.
I see your reasoning there. I'm curious, do you have a gut feeling on where Hayes would maybe measure up against Sexton and Garland after a season or two?
See, that's the thing. If you're asking me as just a pure playmaking point guard, Hayes would be easily the number one. Like, he'd be the starting one for the Cavs. And then Sexton at this point is more or less transitioned to the two guard in his sophomore campaign, and he's gotten obliterated by bigger two guards because of it, because he's still, by any advanced metric, not a good defensive player. And I personally think he's better suited as a six man than he is as a starting guard for the Cavaliers, but that's taboo amongst Cavs fans for some reason, so I try not to expand on that too much. And then Darius, like I said, he's still kind of like the mystery box. Like, I don't know 100% what I'm going to get with him, because like, he shows flashes of potential, but there's plenty of concerning things that he showed. But then you can justify those concerns by the fact that he only played five games in college, was largely recovering from injuries in training camp because of Bayline's coaching methods, and then just was dealing with nagging injuries throughout his rookie campaign. So, I mean, he's admitted, like, he sucked. Like, he's fully said, like, I had a bad rookie campaign by every stretch of the means, and he's accepting of that and trying to work on it. But, no, I just think what Hayes has is a potential just in terms of playmaking, the fact that he can be an offensive initiator and just, like, the maestro of Cleveland's offense, which isn't something they've really had since even with Kyrie. Kyrie was still a score-first guard who had passed second. It'd be something refreshing to have for sure, the fact that they have an actual playmaking guard, and then you just kind of figure out what you have with Sexton and Garland after that, and then somebody's got to get benched, and thankfully that's not my decision. It's just my job to write about it, so.
I do like Hayes, just in a vacuum. I really like him, and you know, drafting him in the top three is totally fine. Obviously, the fit stuff in Cleveland is not ideal, but I do think, because Hayes is a little bit bigger, and I think I like his defensive potential quite a bit, I think a Hayes-Sexton backcourt actually might work, because
it
Hayes
be fun
is
fun. If
go ahead.
No, I was just saying it'd be fun if it works, but
yeah,
maybe it's the Cleveland cynic in me is coming out a little bit, where I'm just expecting the worst.
Oh no, I totally understand. You know, I think if you draft Hayes, it probably is not the greatest endorsement of Garland, who you drafted last year. And I understand the jokes will flow if you draft three straight point guards. So I think we have to kind of ignore that for now. It's probably a practical concern in terms of PR, and maybe if you're trying to save your own job, you don't want to do that. But at the same time,
for sure,
I think it's totally defensible to draft Hayes in the top. And again, I think he does work with Sexton. You know, I think maybe Garland does not work in that partnership. But you know, in terms of just the pick itself, if you just evaluated Hayes as the best player, going back to what I said about the Bulls, there's no one on the Cavs roster that should be dictating fit. And if you have Hayes as the best player, you should just take him.
No, I agree. And to your point about drafting three point guards 3 years in a row, one Cavs executive I was talking to about that, because they've shared to me that LaMelo Ball is firmly on number one on Cleveland's board, and maybe there's a little bit of smoke, they're trying to get teams to trade up for him, whatever, but he compared it to the Cardinals drafting Kyler Murray, where the Cardinals trade up for Josh Rosen the year before, and then they end up taking Kyler Murray first overall. He's like, listen, you take the best player every time that you think is the best player every time, and then you just figure it out from there. And I think Cleveland is kind of at that point where maybe they're flirting with the idea of making the playoffs, and I think they're entering that phase where they're going to be a bad team that tries their best, but they're still not going to win a lot of games. And if you don't really draft for fit, like you said, you draft the best available player. And if you believe Killian Hayes is that best player after LaMelo Ball, you go for it every time, in my opinion. And then if you have to trade one of Sexton or Garland, you sell high on their potential, and hopefully you recruit some assets that just help your rebuild long term.
I don't see any flaws to your reasoning with Hayes, and I also really like him. I'm curious if you gave any thought and if it was close between him and maybe one of the bigs that's projected to go, you know, top 10, maybe top 5. And if so, which one of those bigs maybe you consider the most?
Oh, I would take Onyeka Okongwu every day of the week. I feel like he's the safest player, at least in the top 5. James Wiseman scares me. I think having friends who cover the draft extensively and are all universally low on James Wiseman across the board just kind of turned me off from him in general, which I understand if he doesn't work out and I'm wrong, like, I'm happy to say I was wrong. Like, I wasn't high on Kevin Porter either when the Cavs drafted him, and Kevin Porter proved me wrong. I wasn't high on Colin Sexton when the Cavs drafted him, and Colin Sexton's proved me wrong every step away. But I pick Okongwu just because he reminds me a lot of Bam Adebayo, and I feel like that's just a safer comparison and a safer bet that I could take than on someone like James Wiseman. And I guess the luxury of the situation in Cleveland is big guys usually take a little bit longer to transition to NBA level ball. Andre Drummond is, by all accounts, he's already said that he's opting into his player option next year. You can bring along one of these big guys a little bit more slowly than you could with a lot of these other lottery teams. So maybe there's not as much pressure to really mess up their potential and growth in general. So, yeah, no, I go with Okongwu, long story short. But I just like what he brings to the table more just compared to what Wiseman has. And, yeah, that's just kind of where I'm at.
Fair
Matt,
enough.
Matt, do you agree with that? Just in a vacuum, if you were looking at the bigs, do you have a preference between Wiseman and Conley? Yeah. I know we're sort of off the mock draft now, but I'm curious.
Right. Well, I mean, so in our mock draft 1.0, the Bulls, surprise, had number 7. And we did go with Wiseman there because we felt like it was one of those situations where, you know, there's a reason that this player is projected top 3 by pretty much everybody. And if they slide, maybe sometimes they slide for a reason. Like, you know, Michael Porter Jr. a couple years ago sliding all the way down to Denver was because of some pretty alarming medicals that teams got to look at.
Yep.
With Wiseman, I don't necessarily see a similar reason for him sliding. So when he fell to us at 7, and again, just much like the Cavs are in, as I was talking about, the Bulls are a team that's in a situation where they don't really have a cohesive roster right now that has a lot of chemistry, that makes a lot of sense, that you'd be afraid to, you know, mess around with and shake things up. And even though the Bulls have Wendell, they have Lauri Markkanen, they even have what looks to be a solid piece that they stole in the second round of last year's draft, Daniel Gafford, who showed some strong flashes in the back end of this season. So, you know, adding to that crowded front court wasn't ideal for us, but it was like, all right, well, if somebody slides this far, we're going to take him. Whereas, like, you know, James Wiseman falling all the way to 7 is a little bit more alarming than I think a Kongwu sliding to 7. So as far as which player's skill sets I like more, I understand your reasoning for preferring Onyeka over Wiseman. I just like Wiseman's size. And maybe that's just because, fair. Like, the Bulls have a 6'9 starting center in Wendell Carter Jr. right now. It's like he's got a lot of great defensive skills, and he's showing potential. His basketball IQ is really high. I just got so frustrated watching Wendell just get bodied for the past 2 seasons.
So you're telling me you didn't enjoy Colin Sexton posterizing him?
No, not particularly. But I tell you what, that's not even in the top 10 of frustrating memories of Wendell getting bodied. So,
would you rather Wendell play the 4 instead of the 5? I know he did draw some comps to Al Horford, and I think Al Horford, in my opinion, at least, is better playing the 4 than the 5.
Stop,
at least early in his career.
Stop it! Stop it! I have to log off the podcast now. I can't do that.
I think fans are curious, and Wendell has expressed himself at times, especially this past season, about how he feels more natural at the 4 than the 5, and kind of his pairing with Bagley at Duke and how that worked. He really has not shown any aggression or confidence offensively in his first 2 years in the league. It's been really, really frustrating to watch, given what we all believe to be his potential. The real tricky thing is, then if you're still trying to believe in and develop Lauri Markkanen, you're asking to flip-flop those guys and play Lowry at the 5.
That's true.
And Lowry has nowhere near the defensive wherewithal, the defensive smarts, and the defensive skills that Wendell has. So, yeah, Wendell gives up a little bit more size because Lowry is like a legit 7 feet, but Lowry's pretty much a traffic cone on defense.
Yeah, that's not going to work. I think it's sort of a common theme with especially young big guys that a lot of them who probably need to play center don't love playing center. That's been a thing that even with Wiseman, as funny as that is, Wiseman is like, you know, legit 7 feet, 7'6" wingspan guy. And
that's often, right.
If you watch his tape from high school and AAU stuff, he's floating on the perimeter a lot on offense. And it's kind of hilarious, honestly, to watch because he's obviously a center in every way. But even a guy like that, who's a pure center, has these flashes where he thinks he's like a small 4 offensively. So it's a theme that's always out there. I think Carter's very firmly a center, but I'm with you that the size is not ideal. It can be frustrating as someone who watched Al Horford play for his entire, you know, young prime in Atlanta. I firmly think that Al Horford was a center and was great at center and was an all-star at center, but there are certain matchups where that's tough. Like there's always gonna be a matchup or two. If you're playing a 6'9" center, that's not going to work. And that's frustrating to watch.
Right, and Horford, to his credit, did develop that floor-stretching ability, but not until the mid and later stages of his career. And I think Bulls fans have been frustrated for the first 2 years of Wendell's career, where it was like, hey, he shot 40% at Duke. He could be, like, you know, a floor-stretching 5/4 combo. It was like, well, yeah, he shot 40% on 40 attempts total, and has really not looked to make the 3-point shot any part of his offensive repertoire so far in the NBA. So, like, maybe he can do that at a later stage of his career the way Al Horford has. But right now, that part of his game is just non-existent.
So, Brad, before we wrap this up, because I know we got to be cognizant of the Locked On. So what you're saying is Al Horford was thriving, but you know, then along came Tristan Thompson, and that was his true Achilles heel. Like, I just want you to be on the record. Like, was Tristan Thompson really that big of a dominator in your eyes over Al Horford? Because that's what it always felt like to Cleveland fans. And
I mean, it certainly,
as we like to joke, well, Tristan Thompson was his dad. So
it certainly did not go well against Tristan. That was not the only matchup in which you know, guys in the glass got out. That was Al's really only weakness was his defensive rebounding. It was never very good at center, but that was a tough one. I think we
Whereas
all know that.
Tristan Thompson's only weakness was cell phone videos captured in nightclubs. That was his real weakness, right?
Hey. That's great. Not everyone can be perfect.
That is a great spot to end the podcast, I think. we'll conclude with Tristan Thompson's cell phone discussions. Gentlemen, any final thoughts on how we landed in this mock draft? And obviously, people can go across the network and find the rest of the mock itself. But this is the top three, so we had the most fun of everybody. But any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Let's hope we're not doing this again next season, right? Let's all hope that all of our teams made the collective jump to get their collective you-know-what together, and that this is the last time we do one of these for a while.
I feel the same way. I don't think the Cavs will really be in that conversation yet as much as they think they like to be, but I feel no pity for any team that has to pick in the top three this year, because it is tough to justify at times why you're picking this player, because there are some serious lumps with the top talent in this draft class. And I think Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago was like the trifecta of teams who don't really need to be picking in the top three whenever the draft does end up happening.
Well, big thanks to Brad, Evan, and Matt for that. And we got picks 4 through 6 coming tomorrow in the Delete 8 Mock Draft 2.0. Hear who I pick at number 6 for your Detroit Pistons. And we'll have 7 and 8 coming after that. So a lot of good draft material this week, and we'll be back with regular episodes next week as well. But that wraps up this edition of Locked On Pistons. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.